There you go. So, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this afternoon's sutta class. And this sutta class, as I promised you, would be on the what's called the Upakalesa Sutta. And the translation, the rendering for Upakalesa they have here is called Imperfections. But it really means something much wiser than just imperfections. Just a huge amount of deep obstructions to the process whereby we can go into the deepest of meditations. And this sutta begins with something kind of ordinary, an argument between the monks at Kosambi. Even monks sometimes have arguments. Never bhikkhunis.
Never.
But anyhow, that's just life. And so I'm now going to read out this sutta. As usual, I'm going to do a Namo Tassa first of all, because of the reverence I have for suttas. It's a personal thing, but if you'd like to join in, fine. If you don't want to join in, that's okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So this is the 128th Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Upakalesa Sutta. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Buddha was living at Kosambi in Gosittha's park. Now, on that occasion, the monks at Kosambi had taken to quarreling and brawling and were deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. Obviously, they never did any injuries to each other with real daggers, but that was the idiom at the time, when you're arguing, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. Then a certain monk went to the Buddha, and after paying homage to him, he stood at one side and said, "Venerable sir, the monks here at Kosambi have taken to quarreling and brawling and are deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. It would be good, Venerable Sir, if the Buddha would go to those monks out of compassion." And the Buddha consented in silence. Then the Buddha went to those monks and said to them, "Enough, monks, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or dispute." Then, when this was said, a certain monk said to the Buddha, "Wait, Venerable Sir, let the Buddha, the Lord of the Dhamma, live at ease, devoted to a pleasant abiding here and now. We are the ones who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute." For a second time, for a third time, everything is done three times in the traditional Buddhism. The Buddha said, "Enough, monks, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or dispute." And for a third time, that monk said to the Buddha, "Wait, Venerable Sir. We are the ones who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute." Then, when it was morning, the Buddha, dressed and taking his bowl and outer robe, entered Kosambi for alms. And when he had wandered for alms food in Kosambi and had returned from his alms round, after his meal, he set his resting place in order, took his bowl and outer robe, and while standing, uttered these verses. When many voices shout at once, none considers himself a fool. Though the Sangha is being split, none thinks themselves to be at fault. They have a forgotten thoughtful speech. They talk obsessed by words alone. Uncurbed their mouths, they bawl at will. None knows what leads them to so to act. He abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. He knows who harbor thoughts like these. Hatred will never be allayed. He abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who do not harbor thoughts like these, hatred will readily be allayed. For in this world, hatred is never allayed by further acts of hatred. It is allayed by non-hatred. That is a fixed and ageless law. Those others do not recognize that here we should restrain ourselves. But those wise ones who realize this at once end all their enmity. Breakers of bones and murderers, those who steal cattle, horses, wealth, those who pillage the entire realm, when even these can act together, why can you not do so too? If one can find a worthy friend, a virtuous, steadfast companion, then overcome all threats of danger and walk with them, content and mindful. But if one finds no worthy friend, no virtuous, steadfast companion, then as a king leaves his conquered realm, walk like a tusker in the woods alone. Better it is to walk alone. There is no companionship with fools. Walk alone and do no evil, at ease like a tusker in the woods. And many of you may have recognized that little stanza of some of the phrases, which are very, very popular. But what happened next was the Buddha took his bowl and robes and left Kosambi. It was kind of strange that, you know, when people are having arguments and they never really listen to themselves, they never see the stupidity of what they're doing. And even when the Buddha tries, you know, to create some peace and harmony there, basically they said, well, you just go off and meditate and live at peace. We'll settle this. It's amazing just how arrogant people become when they just start breaking out into arguments. Then, having uttered these stanzas while standing, the Buddha went to the village of Balakalonakara. On that occasion, the Venerable Bhikkhu was living at the village of Balakalonakara. When the Venerable Bhikkhu saw the Buddha coming in the distance, he prepared a seat, set up water for washing the feet, and the Venerable Bhikkhu paid homage to the Buddha and sat down at one side. And the Buddha said to him, I hope you are keeping well, monk. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. And that became like a standard greeting for monastics who haven't seen each other for a while. So that's one of the things I would have asked you, Venerable Chanda. I hope you are keeping well, Ayachanda. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. It's just a general sort of inquiry of kindness. I am keeping well, Buddha. I am comfortable. I am not having any trouble getting alms food. Then the Buddha instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened the Venerable Bhikkhu with a talk on the Dhamma, after which he rose from his seat and went to the Eastern Bamboo Park. This is where it now gets close to the sutta. Now, on that occasion, the Venerable Anuruddha, the Venerable Nandiya, and the Venerable Kimbala were living at the Eastern Bamboo Park. These are three of my favorite monks. So much so that I like to name some of the monks who I ordain as Anuruddha or Nandiya or Kimbala. The person who did the editing on my translations of these suttas was the monk Venerable Kimbala. And Nandiya is also a really nice monk. You've got our tissues. Please excuse me, I've got to blow my nose. Now, this is what happened next. So he went to the place where Venerable Aniruddha, Nandi and Kimbala were living at the Eastern Bamboo Park. Then the park keeper saw the Buddha coming in the distance and told him, "Do not enter this park, recluse." The park keeper didn't recognize the Buddha. "Do not enter this park, recluse. There are three clansmen," that's just the name they called them, "seeking their own good. Do not disturb them." So that's like if there was somebody, if I was coming to Anukampa, Bhikkhun Grove, then it'd be quite right for one of you to say, Matthias, to see me coming and say, "Please don't disturb this recluse who is practicing well here with two amazing Anagarikas." That's what you're supposed to say. The park, "Do not disturb them." Then the Venerable Aniruddha heard the park keeper speaking to the Blessed One and told him, "Friend, park keeper, do not keep the Buddha out. It is our teacher, the Buddha, who has come." Then the Venerable Aniruddha went to the Venerable Nandi and Venerable Kimbala and said, "Come out, venerable sirs, come out. Our teacher, the Buddha, has come." Then all three went to meet the Buddha. One took his bowl and outer robe. One prepared a seat, and one set out water for washing the feet. Remember, people didn't use shoes in those days, so when you were walking, you would, have to wash your feet when you came into the building. Then those three venerable ones paid homage to the Buddha, sat down at one side, and the Buddha said to them, "I hope you are all keeping well, Aniruddha." That's what he said. "I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food." Now, just stop there for a moment. I want to point out something. Okay, naturally. There, when there's three monks, or it could be three bhikkhunis, it could be three of anybody who's a group, often they always address them as as one of them, the most senior, just Aniruddha. But obviously, he was not ignoring the other two. What was happening, the senior one almost assumed the title of all three of them. Sometimes in some translation, they say Aniruddhas in the plural. The word Aniruddha is referring to all three of them. The only reason I point that out is because in the Satipatthana Sutta, Lokaya Bija, Dhammanasang, those two words mean only the first two of the five hindrances. They say having lessen them, restrain them, or minimize them, Vinaya, Lokaya Bija, and Dhammanasang. They say, what about the other three hindrances? They are also included. So when the Buddha says to Aniruddha, he doesn't mean just Aniruddha, he means Aniruddha and the two other monks who were staying with him. He was the senior. It's an idiom of the Pali language. Okay. I lost my place. Okay. "I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food." "We are keeping well, Buddha. We are comfortable. We are not having any trouble getting alms food." "I hope, Aniruddha," Buddha continues, "that you are all living in harmony with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water." Please excuse me, I would usually say blending like condensed milk and tea, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Thank you for smiling, because when you actually make comments like that, it actually engages people in listening more. "So we are living in harmony with mutual appreciation, without disputing, viewing each other with kindly eyes." Surely, that's what Aniruddha said, surely we are doing this. "But, Aniruddha, how do you live thus?" We're getting to the meditation part in a moment. But here is a big, a nice little brief encouragement and mentioning the importance of harmony within a community. How do you live like thus, Anuruddha? Venerable sir, as to that, I think thus. It is a gain for me. It is a great gain for me that I am living with such companions in a holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards these venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do? And I set aside what I wish to do and I do what these venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, venerable sir, but one in mind. You understand that? So we're having a harmonious Anukampa grove. Excuse me. Then why am I?
Okay.
Yeah, but there's so many flowers went in. Okay, anyway. We are different in body, venerable sir, but one in nose. Oh, so one in mind. The Venerable Nanda and the Venerable Kimbala each spoke likewise, adding, that is how, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Good, good, Anuruddha. I hope that you all abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. Surely, Venerable Sir, we abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. But, Anuruddha, how do you abide thus? Venerable Sir, as to that, whichever of us returns first from the village with alms food, prepares the seats, sets out the water for drinking and for washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place, whichever of us returns last, eats any alms food left over, if he wishes. Otherwise, he throws it away where there is no greenery or drops it into water where there is no life. He puts away the seats and the water for drinking and for washing. He puts away the refuse bucket after washing it, and he sweeps out the refectory. Whoever notices that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or the latrine are low or empty, takes care of them. If they are too heavy for him, he calls someone else by a signal of the hand, and they move it by joining hands. But because of this, we do not break out into speech. But every 5 days, we sit together all night discussing the Dhamma. That is how we abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. Good, good, Anuruddha. But while you abide thus diligent, ardent, and resolute, have you attained any superhuman states, a distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones, a comfortable abiding? Now those words, superhuman states, it doesn't mean anything which qualifies you as being figured in a DC comic movie show, not a Superman or Superwoman. But these are superhuman states. They call these Uttari Manusa Dhamma. These are states of deep understanding of jhanas. Also, the nimittas will be included, but also great insights. These are what we call superhuman states, not liberty to run fast or fly through the air or whatever other things are regarded as great skills in our world today. But these are great understandings, great knowledge, great stillness of the mind. So good, good. But why you abide thus diligent, ardent, resolute? Have you attained any superhuman states, a distinction in knowledge and vision, worthy of the noble ones, the noble ones, the Aryas, a comfortable abiding? Sometimes we don't emphasize that, a comfortable abiding. This is where you can sit quietly, peaceful, and you are very, very comfortable in that state. Venerable Sir, as we abide here, diligent, ardent, and resolute, we perceive both light and a vision of forms. Soon afterwards, the light and the vision of forms disappear, but we have not discovered a cause for that. And this is where we get to the light and the vision of forms teaching. The Buddha replies, that nimitta should be penetrated, comprehended, Anuruddha. You should discover the cause for that. And I'm not making this up, it's nimittaṃ paṭivijitabhaṃ. Penetrate the cause for these nimittas. You should discover the cause for that. Before my enlightenment, said the Buddha, when I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too perceived both light and a vision of forms. Soon afterwards, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I thought, what is the cause and condition why the light and the vision of forms have disappeared? Then I consider thus. You're listening? Doubt. That's the first problem. Doubt arose in me, and because of the doubt, my stillness fell away. And when my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. And I'll pause there, because I'm doing a commentary as I go along with this sutta. It's amazing just how many people do experience doubt after they've had a nimitta experience. And I'm not quite sure why this is. I think there's a lot of reason is that we always underestimate ourselves. We often think this is too difficult for ourselves. And sometimes we say, I can't do this that easily. You know, you need to be meditating for many, 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 many years. But one thing which I can say to you, that I have talked to so many people, hundreds of people, not just monks and nuns, but the lay community as well. And every time they come and ask a question, I had this experience, that couldn't be an inimitor, could it? And 9 times out of 10, actually that's being quite conservative, more than 9 times out of 10, what you see is an inimitor. It may not be fully developed yet, but it is the first experience of these things called nimittas. So each one of you, now, it's on the screens, so I'm looking at you, your faces, each one of you, if you have this idea that you may have seen a nimitta, experienced a nimitta, most times, actually, it is. And this was Anuruddha. I perceive both light and the vision of forms. I said, next one. So, I shall so act that doubt will not arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived both light and a vision of forms. Soon afterwards, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. And I thought, what is the cause and condition why the light and the vision of forms have disappeared? And I considered thus, inattention arose in me. And because of inattention, my stillness fell away. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention will arise in me again. How can you have inattention when something beautiful comes up? A lot of times people get conditioned not to pay too much attention to any funny business, not actually funny business. Sorry, I think this is Mara has gone up into my nose.
Right.
Sorry?
It's all right.
Yes, I know it's all right, but Mara, please don't mess around. This is the first time I've had a runny nose when I've been reading the suttas. It must be Mara. What was I? Doubt arose in me. An inattention arose in me. And because of inattention, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappears. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus sloth and torpor arose in me. And because of sloth and torpor, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappear. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention nor sloth and torpor will arise in me again. As the next one, I really love this one because it gives a little a simile and it's so apt. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus, fear arose in me, and because of my fear, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man set out on a journey and murderers leaped out on both sides of him. Then fear would arise in him because of that. So too, fear arose in me, and the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention nor sloth and torpor nor fear will arise in me again. One of the reasons I like that simile is because of all of these problems, fear is one of the biggest ones, and that's what it kind of feels like. You're walking down the path of meditation, and then it's like you're going to be lose something which you cherish so much, so dearly. It's kind of like someone's going to kill you. All the things which you identify with is about to disappear and get lost. And that creates that fear. So these beautiful, powerful lights are much more powerful than you think you can handle. Even though they're benign, they're powerful, they're beautiful, a lot of times whenever we are faced with big fear, powerful person, because they are so powerful, then it does make us afraid. And there's many stories which I've had in my monastic life. When you meet someone who's got great psychic powers, and there are some people actually exist who do have great psychic power, and if they have those powers, you get terrified. It's one of the reasons why that if you do have any psychic powers, please never demonstrate them. Not the fancy stuff like just disappearing or flying through the air or something. Because if you do, it makes whoever looks at that so scared, they can realize you're far more powerful than they are. And maybe they don't trust you enough yet that they will even kind of run away. There was one of the stories of like Chitta the householder, Chitta Gahapati, who was met one of his friends, former friends, who was now a bhikkhu. And this bhikkhu was actually did perform a small psychic power of just making it rain during a hot day. Sometimes I think if I had that power, then maybe I would make it rain to save Venerable Chanda's lawn and some of the flowers and cool the place off a bit. But then Chitta, who this young man was his friend, just asked him, he said, can you perform another power? And so the monk said, put your robe, or even lay people were kind of robes, and put it on the floor of my hut and just wait. And then the monk went inside his hut, and this big flame came through the keyhole of his hut and started burning the robe. And even though Chitta eventually became a non-returner, at this time, Chitta the householder was just so shocked at the power that he just went away and left. That's what happens when you demonstrate a psychic power. You think, oh, please let me see one. Please, 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 please. But then if you actually demonstrate one, people run away. The power is frightening. Even that's in the time of the Buddha. You don't mind me telling these stories as well. One of the people I knew, he was an Indonesian monk. And, I talked to him, I knew him, he was a great monk. But that sometimes, he did a psychic power once with one of my friends in Thailand. She was a princess, I think grandchild of a one of the former kings. And she started getting involved in meditation and went to Wat Bawon, a Thai monastery there, to practice some meditation with this Indonesian monk. And once when she was there on a meditation class, that she realized something strange was happening. She opened her eyes and she saw from the eyes of this Indonesian monk, there were rays of light coming out from his eyes, going into one of the other meditators' bodies. Now, that was some of the psychic powers this monk had. I have no doubt of that, having taught him to understand where he was and what he'd been doing. But the result of that, seeing someone with such amazing sort of powers of meditation, only doing it out of benevolence, she got so scared that she stood up, bowed, and left, and never went back again. That's what happens. It's scary. So anyway, so when, let me get into this. When fear arose in you, sorry?
Fear.
Yeah. When fear arose in me, because it felt like the two guys, murderers, jumped out at you and about to really hurt you, harm you. So too fear arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention nor sloth and torpor nor fear will arise in me again. And fear is one of the big ones with animators. They're beautiful. I'm trying my best to do a
sales pitch.
Sorry?
Sales pitch.
Yeah, sales pitch, so that you won't feel afraid of them. You allow them to do their job and send you off into beautiful, deep meditations. But nevertheless, kind of is a bit scary. As Aniruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus, elation arose in me because of elation. My stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappears. Suppose a man seeking one entrance to a hidden treasure came all at once upon five entrances to hidden treasures. Then the elation would arise in him because of that. So too elation arose in me, and the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I consider thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear nor elation will arise in me again. And I always mention that those two, the fear and the elation, are the two main enemies of the development of these nimittas. But you can understand that they are powerful. And even though whether you've been wanting to get them and struggling to attain them and experience them for years, nevertheless, even if they just happen by themselves unexpectedly, still they're powerful. And the elation and the fear, the wow or the awe, those kind of responses are kind of natural. However, if you know to expect them, if you know to kind of avoid them and not to buy into them, elation, throw the party afterwards. Don't throw the party while you're enjoying the or getting to know those nimittas. In other words, a nimitta comes up, you don't say, yay, and it all falls apart. As a nimitta comes up, let it stabilize. And then later on, at the end of the meditation, we can hold a party for you. You understand what I mean? Do you?
Yes.
Okay. So, where's it going?
Elation,
yeah. As Aniruddha was abiding diligent, I considered thus, inertia arose in me. And because of inertia, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention nor elation nor inertia will arise in me again. As Aniruddha was abiding diligent, I considered thus, excess of energy arose in me. And because of excess of energy, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quail, a tiny bird, tightly with both hands. It would die then and there. So to an excess of energy arose in me, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, dot, 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 nor inertia nor excess of energy will arise in me again. As Anuruddha was abiding diligent, I considered thus deficiency of energy arose in me. And because of deficiency of energy, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and visions of forms disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quail loosely, it would fly out of his hands. So too, a deficiency of energy arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I consider thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, dot, 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 nor excess of energy, nor deficiency of energy will arise in me again. Okay, now it's got a few more to go yet. As Anuruddha was abiding diligent, I considered thus, a longing arose in me. And because of that longing, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor deficiency of energy, nor longing will arise in me again. And of course, that's one of the other big obstacles. Now, wanting these nimittas, or wanting them to stay, or longing in any which way. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, I considered thus, perception of diversity arose in me. And because of perception of diversity, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention or longing or perception of diversity will arise in me again. And that little point, perception of diversity, that is where sometimes nimittas which you perceive, they can be simple nimittas, just like a light, like a moon in the sky. Or it can be sometimes like a many formed, like a person, or like I said, like a Garfield. That was a perception of diversity. The best nimittas are the most simple ones, with hardly any inside or outside, a simple color, just pretty smooth and bright and brilliant, but not sort of diverse forms. It's one of the other reasons why that I was misled for a while when trying to see, you know, what shape these nimittas are in the mind. Are they round? Are they square, triangular, polygon, octagon, or whatever? And then you realize that I was paying too much attention to the diversity, only a very simple diversity, but diversity of inside and outside. And that was a hindrance to developing these nimittas. Any diversity, put it aside. As Anuruddha was abiding diligent, I considered thus, excessive meditation upon forms arose in me. And because of excessive meditation upon forms, my stillness fell away. When my stillness fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither all these other things, nor perception of diversity, nor excessive meditation upon forms will arise in me again. And that is when you are looking at the shape of these things. And the shape is not important, just the light inside is far more important. Now, when Anuruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned doubt. The inattention is an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned that inattention, sloth and torpor, fear, elation, inertia, excess of energy, deficiency of energy, longing, perception of diversity, or excessive meditation upon forms is an imperfection of the mind. I abandon these. As Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceive light, but I did not see forms. I saw forms, but I did not perceive light. even for a whole night or a whole day or a whole day and night. I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? Then I consider thus. On the occasion when I do not attend to the sign of forms, but attend to the sign of light, these are different limiters, I then perceive the light, but do not see forms. On the occasion when I do not attend to the light limiter, but attend to the form limiter, I see forms, but not perceive light, even for a whole night or a whole day and a whole night. As a Naruda, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived limited light and saw limited forms. I perceived immeasurable light and saw immeasurable forms, even for a whole night or a whole day or a whole day and night. And I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? And I considered thus, on the occasion when stillness is limited, my vision is limited. And with limited vision, I perceive limited light and limited forms. But on the occasion when stillness is immeasurable, my vision is immeasurable. And with immeasurable vision, I perceive immeasurable light and see immeasurable forms, even for a whole night or a whole day or a whole day and night. When, Aniruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind and abandoned it, when I understood that inattention is an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned it, please excuse me. When I had understood that inattention, when I understood the sloth and torpor, and abandoned it, fear, and abandoned it, elation, and abandoned it, inertia, and had abandoned it, excessive energy, deficiency of energy, had abandoned them, abandoned longing, abandoned perception of diversity, abandoned excessive meditation upon forms, and imperfection of the mind. And then I thought, I have abandoned those imperfections of the mind. Let me now develop stillness in three ways. Thereupon, Aniruddha, I develop the first jhana with vitaka and vichara, this movement of the mind onto the object and holding onto the object. I develop the stillness between the first and second jhana, without vitaka but with vichara. I develop the stillness with rapture, the second jhana, and without rapture, and accompanied by enjoyment, that's the third jhana, and accompanied by equanimity, the fourth jhana. All without vitaka and vichara. When Aniruddha had developed the first jhana and the other three jhanas, the knowledge and vision arose in me. My deliverance is unshakable. This is my last birth. Now there is no renewal of being. This is what the Buddha said, and the Venerable Aniruddha was satisfied and delighted in the Buddha's words. Was it just Aniruddha was delighted? Whenever they said Aniruddha, it meant the other two monks as well. That is just how Pali works. The list, all those monks were there, Aniruddha, Kimbala, and Nandiya. But nevertheless, they just by mentioning the first one, it also includes the other two there. So to sum up that sutta, some of the most important parts of it is that these are problems, which means the light which you are developing does not maintain, falls apart, falls away. The most important parts of those upakalesa, the imperfections, is when the mind gets excited or gets afraid or longing. I always think those three are the biggest ones. And just to make it interesting for you, I'm now going to mention Ajahn Chah's a description of those nimittas and those jhanas, just because it helped me so much, just when he described the life of a forest monk. The life of a forest monk in his days, they would always try to arrive at a suitable place in a jungle, which was either next to a river or a big pond or lake, because in the evening you'd have to take a wash. I don't know about you, but a couple of days in a row, I was walking on this tudong, wandering in the jungles of Thailand. When I was walking, I hadn't found any water, and so I couldn't bathe. And it was hard enough to have enough water in my little flask, which I had to keep with me. And so you soon got so, felt so dirty and so uncomfortable. And because of that, we always try to find some water in the late afternoon. And when we found that water in the late afternoon, I could do without food, but do without eating. That was really hard. And I can do without food, but not without no water. And not without bathing even. That was really tough to endure because it got very dirty and very uncomfortable. And even that sort of started to kind of, even just a few, little bit of water on you and wiping it down, like I mentioned to you today, getting a piece of cloth and like a handkerchief and just wetting it and just wiping yourself down. That gave you quite a bit of relief. But anyhow, you try and always find a body of water late in the afternoon or evening, just there, a lake or a little pool of water or a river was wonderful. And then you could take like a nice cool bath. But Ajahn Chah would always remind me that often, having bathed, that he would put his mosquito net umbrella just a few meters away from the edge of the lake, not too far, just a few meters away from the edge of the lake. And sometimes in the evening, especially if it was a starry night or the moon was up, he would start the evening keeping his eyes open. When he kept his eyes open in the evening, you know, when the sun had gone down, but you could still see things in the forest because of the moon, that is when he watched animals come out, the forest animals. Some of those animals were dangerous, the tigers and elephants and panthers and things, or like black, were they panthers, but they were black cats. Some of those were kind of dangerous, but he could sit so still, they would not notice him. And so because he sat still, it was not they had bad eyesight, because when they came out of the jungle, they would move their ears around, trying to notice if there was any dangers around. The sense of sound was one of their basic defense mechanisms. And not just the sense of sound, but the sense of smell too. Sometimes if he moved, they could smell him. That's how sensitive their smells, their noses were. And after a minute just sniffing around or just listening carefully, if they thought there was nothing there, no one there watching them, then they would, you know, call their family, especially their little cubs, and they would play by the still forest pool. And they said that was delightful. These were, I don't know if Ajahn Chah ever saw TV, these were the days before Nature Channel or Natural Geographic or whatever. And he said it was delightful, you know, just to begin the evening, just watching the animals play. They'd only come out though when he was really still. And then sometimes he said he was so still, he still had his eyes open, that very rare and shy animals would come out to play in the still forest pool. And these are animals which were so beautiful and so delightful and kind of rare. And they'd come out to play in the still forest pool in the evening. And sometimes, he says, some extremely rare animals would come out to play in the still forest pool. He said those quite shy but beautiful animals who were very rare, those were the nimittas. And those who were incredibly beautiful and even more rare, which would come out to play, but only when he was very still, were the jhanas. And he said, even the slightest, oh, wow, yeah. They would notice that and they'd run away, wouldn't come out again for days. It had to be as if you weren't even there. And this is where his little seminary was very, very helpful. And just so you can remember this, I even remember teaching that to many people over in Perth. One of the people I taught it to was the husband of a Thai disciple. And his job was a photographer for a local paper. And that his editor once told him that there was a rumor going around that the Australian person, please let me tell the story. I thought it was kind of cool, but it was also interesting. That the Australian TV personality, Kylie Minogue, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen her, but apparently she was famous. Kylie Minogue was having some sort of difficulty, having kind of little breakdown, and she was hiding in Cable Beach Resort in Western Australia, in the north of Western Australia, outside the town of Broome. That was just a rumor. And so this photographer's boss asked him, do you want to go up and see if you can find any details? It's only a rumor, but who knows? And so it's a beautiful place in the world. So he took the free air ticket and a couple of days accommodation in this amazing resort. And as he went up there, and when he sort of booked in, of course, no one would tell if this star was staying at this resort. So the first day, he took his camera and he crawled through the bush. And as he was crawling through the bush, he saw her. It was more than a rumor, it was real. And so he saw in the distance, isn't it? Easily able to be photographed. And then he remembered the story of the still forest pool. Instead of seeing an imitator, which was very shy, he was seeing this film star who was very shy. And he moved up his camera and was mindful enough and silent enough to press the button of the camera and get the most important camera shot of his career. And then it was not very kind to Kylie Minogue. But nevertheless, he said, thank you for your simile of how to stabilize Janus. How to stabilize Nimitus, because he used that to catch the photograph of his life. So, I kind of thought that's kind of interesting, but not very nice. Anyway, this is how the Buddha describes how he would use those, how he used those nimittas, how he stabilized those nimittas, noticing the imperfections, and then entered those jhanas so that he could be fully enlightened. When I developed the first jhana, between the first and second jhana, and the third jhana, knowledge and vision arose in me. My deliverance is unshakable. This is my last birth. Now there is no renewal of being. That is what the Buddha said, and Anuruddha was satisfied and delighted in the Buddha's words. I got a question. Yeah, come on.
Yes, inertia.
Inertia is basically you are not allowing. Inertia means like you're very heavy and you're being pulled towards these deeper levels of samadhi, of stillness, but you kind of resist. You don't allow your mind to be light enough, supple enough to be able to allow those nimittas to happen and grow. Inertia, just like a block of solid granite. So you've got no flexibility. Can't get pulled towards those nimittas. It's not what you do. In each one of these meditations, you don't make a decision, this is where I'm going to go next. Because in these deep meditations, if you have any thought whatsoever during at least subtle times, the whole stillness disappears. This means real stillness. So nothing is moving. These nimittas become brighter and brighter and brighter. Inertia means you cannot let the mind go to the next level, deeper inwards. Does that make any sense? Thank you. But why you chinos?
Can I ask a question, Ajahn?
Yes, certainly may I ask a question.
When you mentioned Uttari Madhusa Dhammas.
Oh, yeah.
So normally in the Vinaya that relates to the jhanas, psychic powers, or enlightenment, but you said nimittas were included, which I've never heard before. I mean, that's not strictly the case, is it?
Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. And Ajahn Bamali pointed that out to me. But basically, some of them are mentioned, nimittas.
Where?
They have to ask Ajahn Bamali that. Mm. But the Uttari Madhusa Dhamma are often mentioned. It's not just the jhanas.
Right, but it's superior human states, which means you're out of this five-sense realm into another realm, like a Brahmaloka, but nimitta is not yet.
Actually, really powerful nimittas. Then you are out of this five sense realm.
Okay.
Now what happens with just the when you start experiencing nimittas first of all, then just like I mentioned with the simile of the thousand petal lotus, you can see it almost like on the outside is the last of those five senses, the feeling of the breath. And inside is this beautiful nimitta, which has not really much to do with the five senses. It's a mind object totally. And it's if you're on the edge between one and the other. But when the nimitta really starts to develop, all you see is this beautiful light, and the five senses are kind of pushed into the background. The light is just so gorgeous and beautiful and attractive. That's the only place where you go. The five senses are just, if you can experience them at all, are hovering in the background.
So it means you're right on the edge, in other words,
yeah.
Of the jhana. It's almost like saying that you could say that being on the path to stream winning is Uttari Madhusa Dhamma, in that it's inevitable.
Yeah.
That you're.
It is. It's defined as saying.
But then it's still more ambiguous.
What is ambiguous, though?
More ambiguous as to whether they're really Uttari Madhusa Dhammas until you actually enter those things.
Now, that's a good point. You know, you're on the edge, say, of jhana, when you experience this powerful stream winner. Yeah, you're on the edge of, like, jhanas when you experience powerful nimittas. And just the distance between those jhanas and that nimittas, you know, very small indeed. Why not to take that last step? It's almost... You have to stop yourself. You have to have some excess fear or something there which stops you going into the jhana. I know that people often say that you can get the wisdom, the insights of Uttari Madhusa Dhamma just before the jhana, in the state of
Upachara
Samadhi, yeah, neighborhood Samadhi. But what is neighborhood samadhi? First of all, neighborhood samadhi is right on the edge. So why a person would not take that next step to go into the jhana, to one, to confirm it, and number two, to give you extra energy, extra mindfulness, extra stability, makes absolutely no sense to me. And I remember just talking with Ajahn Jayasarva once, because he was doing the final version, the final edition of Ajahn Chah's biography. He wanted a few bits of interview me about some of the things which I remember from living with Ajahn Chah. And also one of the things which he asked me, or actually I asked him. Now, I was just checking my memory of Ajahn Chah's teaching. When exactly did Ajahn Chah say that insight arises? Is it on the way into the jhanas, or is it after you emerge from those jhanas? And he was saying this because he spent such a long time listening to all the recordings of Ajahn Chah. And he said straight away, it's on the way out from the jhanas, not on the way in. Because on the way into the jhana, yes, that can be neighborhood samadhi, but on the way out, it's also neighborhood samadhi. You pass over the welcome mat on the door of your house as you go in, but also as you go out. And as you go out of the jhanas, your mindfulness, your stability, your stillness, the absence of the five hindrances is much, much stronger and lasts much longer.
I've also heard you say, Ajahn, that on the way in, you might think you're on the doormat, but unless you know where the house is, then the doormat could still be a mile away.
That's a good simile. Who said that?
You.
Thank you. Did you hear No. I also said, on the way in to a jhana, you may be on the doormat of the house, but then you haven't really seen the house yet, so you may have got it mistaken. The doormat may be a long way away, but when you come out of the house, that must be the doormat. You've just been in the jhana, and that really is the doormat.
We really are doormats too.
Yeah. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
So it is now 5 o'clock. But is there any other? No, you can't really do any
This
questions.
evening.
Yes, yeah, evening. Any questions? Please get a piece of paper and write it down. I'll do my best to answer it. That's number 128 of the Majjhima Nikaya, the Upekkalesa Sutta. And one of the reasons I mentioned that, because I don't know why, but there was one monk who kept criticizing me and saying, the Buddha never taught nimittas. And gave a whole sutta on it. The Upekkalesa Sutta. So please, if ever you want to check that out, please give it a good read, focus on it, and find out why it is you see these beautiful lights, why they can't remain, and why you can't get drawn into them to go into the jhanas. Okay, thank you all for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I shall give it to my itchy nose for this evening.
Okay, so we'll see you at 6:30 for some meditation practice again.